From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's May the 7th, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services. He's in Oakland, Illinois. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, farm bill negotiators are revisiting the issues of the AGI, the adjusted gross income, direct payments cap, and the cap for conservation payments. And the Senate Homeland Security Committee is hearing testimony today on the effects ethanol production may be having on the food supply. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with these and many more ag news stories. And then we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. That'll happen as we finish up this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL Public Radio from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. Nearby May wheat at $7.95, down 11 cents a bushel. July at 807.5 for the new crop, 10.5 cents lower. And September wheat futures at 821.75, down 10.25. May wheat in Kansas City at $8.99, down a nickel. July at 857.75, down 6.25. May corn futures 601.5, up 6.75. July at 613, 6.75 higher. And September futures $6.22.75, up 6.75. December contract in the corn pit $6.30.5, new crop December up 7 cents for the day. May soybean futures at $12.97.25 a bushel, up 32.75 cents. July at $13.09, 32 cents higher. And the August futures at $13.01.25, up 31.25. September contract $12.73.5, up 31. And November beans at $12.45.5, 28 cents higher. June live cattle $91.82.5, unchanged on the day. The August at $97.62.5, down 20 cents. May feeder cattle at $105.72.5, up a 17.5 cents. August at $108.27.5. 7.5 cents higher. May lean hog futures at $77.87.5 a hundredweight, a dollar and a nickel higher, and the June futures there at $75.27.5, 52.5 cents higher on the afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. Outside markets now, crude oil futures trading at $123.55 a barrel today, or up $1.71 at this hour for the June contract. July at $123.10, up $1.76. June ethanol at $2.55.9, up 1.1. July futures at $2.53, up 3.2 for the day. And the natural gas is trading the June contract at $11.31.6, up 16.6. And the July futures at $11.43.7, up 15.1 for the day. The RBOB gasoline at $3.12.59, that's up 0.0204 for the day. Propane at $169.5 for the afternoon. Gold futures are trading at $869.60, down $6.40 for the day. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 12,853. It's just about 168 points lower for the day. The dollar at 73.509 on the afternoon. And the CRB index at 418.91. That's up 0.37. Here's the weather forecast as it comes in from Mike Sola for the day. He says a flash flood watch is in effect for southwestern Illinois. That through tomorrow morning. Tonight, cloudy skies, scattered showers, a few thunderstorms across the two-state region. Lows will range from 42 in northwestern Illinois to around 60 in the far south. Thursday in northern Illinois becoming mostly sunny and cooler. Elsewhere, mostly cloudy, some showers, a few thunderstorms. Those will diminish in coverage during the afternoon. Highs will range from 52 near Lake Michigan to 70 in the south. The extended forecast says frequent chances of rain will continue across the area next week, especially during the second half of the week. We'll hear more with Drew Lerner of World Weather just after the bottom of the hour. I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Baisdefer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Paul, it's been an interesting 6 months, 7 months, 8 months, 2 years, I suppose, in the commodity markets. What do you see today?
Well, the continuation of strong energy prices, particularly in crude oil, is having two major effects on things, plus the wet weather. We're seeing higher corn prices, higher soybean prices, and also we're seeing a weaker Dow Jones Industrial Futures contract futures, and the Dow's down about 186 points now. The marketplace, of course, on one extreme, here's Wayne Nelson's comments about some acres, extra acres of corn going into production, and then my customers in the north half of Illinois or northern 40% or 50% of Illinois basically are saying, you know, we still have about half our corn yet to plant. So they're anxious to just get their acreage planted versus some comments in the east of extra acres. The dry weather is the balance of power there. The wet weather in the forecast is definitely going to delay the rest of the wrap-up of the planting here in this in the U.S. The rest of the week.
Yeah, Wayne, of course, making those comments yesterday, and I do believe he said that they would, in the eastern Corn Belt, that they were looking at more plantings of acres, but he doubted
they
that they would come.
They were a little shy last year on the big bulge in acres, and maybe it's more towards just the slight, you know, 55% type of planting.
Sure, but offset, I think, of course, as he mentioned, that Iowa was well behind, that northern Illinois and parts of Illinois weren't as planted as they'd like to be. And today we've got wet weather forecasts that go out 10 days now. And I suppose that's the reason that soybeans happen to be up in price, too. Not only will this have be a concern for the corn market, but certainly for soybeans and yield at the end of the year.
Well, you know, my adage is that, you know, a delayed corn plant, you have a delayed bean plant, but plant as well. But the big factor in soybeans, of course, is the negotiations in Buenos Aires isn't going very well between the farmers and the socialist labor party in Argentina. They want to keep the taxes very high. I think it's at 40+% on the, you know, on soybeans. There was some progress made on, I think, beef and corn or beef and wheat. But, you know, whenever you give 40% of your bean crop away to the government, it sounds very expensive. And there's a lot of things built into that in the fact that there's a big disincentive to plant beans next year or as many beans. It does take a lot of new investment opportunities away from them. And by the way, the third largest producing country in the world of soybeans is Argentina, second in corn and fourth in beef and wheat.
And then, you know, let's take those numbers then or talk about those numbers in relation to the ending stocks estimates that will come out from USDA and some of the WASDE predictions. Because if Argentina does not produce as much next year, that's going to make that bean number really pretty important in the U.S. I think we're looking at, 270 on the average guess for the 07-08. Is that right?
That's the 08-09,
which is the one I want to look at, 08-09, 270. But, boy, there could be real pressure on that number if Argentina doesn't produce.
The big thing that I talk when I talk to people that own farms, I've got a very large customer that owns a big plantation, big farm down there, 10,000 acres, and he says that the investments, a lot of it is sugarcane, sugar, and ethanol, and also cotton. The bean is not important, not the big focus of market opportunity. And, of course, you have this major problem in Argentina. So the real bucks, so to speak, are not in the soybean fields of South America. It's in the sugar and ethanol energy complex. And with that, they probably would like to plant more corn down there as well. So the big boom of 8 to 10% more acres that I was even thinking about probably is on the back burner. That even makes it more probable that we will see some CRP acres if we ever get a new farm bill out of Washington. The other major factor here is that when you aren't sure that you can ship a bean out of Argentina, it makes it more lucrative to the only place to really to come to buy those beans is out of the U.S. And this 160 million carryover on these old crop beans, some people are talking as low as 120. And it's very hard to buy a soybean. Most farmers have sold at the elevators, or, you know, basically have already shipped them and bought futures or something against them. So as a result of that, the ability to buy beans is going to be harder to do and harder to find in the next 60, 90 days, 120 days. But and particularly when we have a delayed plant in soybeans, you know, so owning old crop beans, I think, is going to be a major problem for the marketplace to sort out here in the near term.
Okay, crystal ball for me just a bit. So say we get out 10 days and we do get the crop planted after that and have the have some kind of yield problem with it because of the late planting, but have normal growing conditions. What do you see for old and new crop corn and soybeans in that 60 to 90 day period and then into the fall? How much upside potential is there? Can you take with soybeans and the problems in Argentina, potential late crop here in the Midwest, and roll that into getting back towards the contract highs, corn as well, and pushing through there?
Well, we probably have a little fluff in ethanol demand now in corn, and also maybe exports probably aren't going to be as good. But with this carryover next year of 650 million bushels of corn, 685, you know, we definitely have a threat to and the necessity of going up to maybe 650 on the new crop futures here, just in normal growing conditions. You know, as far as the old crop beans with 120 million carryover, you know, it's hard to pin just how high those can go. But, you know, we could definitely test old season's highs in the soybeans. We are going to be blessed with a big wheat crop. Hopefully the government, somewhere in that big farm bill, hopefully they have a provision there where we can buy 100 million bushels of wheat for the Commodity Credit Corporation, so we have a rainy day fund, have some wheat, so we don't have $20 wheat anymore in this country. But the big factor here is that we are still have a carryover of 1.3 billion bushels, and by any measure, that's enough corn to meet any kind of demand that comes along here, at least till this crop's harvested this fall.
Thanks much, Paul.
Have a profitable day.
You too. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on Wednesdays. This came into my email box. I thought I'd read some of these out to you. From Purdue University, Alan Miller there has some recommendations for maximizing efficiency and reducing your fuel cost. Switch to no-till and reduce tillage operations for corn. You may be forced to do that. Combine more operations into each pass over the field. Probably thought about that one. And think like a marketer and keep in mind the annual cycle of fuel prices due to seasonality. We talk about that issue on Tuesdays here on the Closing Mark Report. You can go back and pick that one up if you'd like on a podcast right there on our website at willag.org.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Leonard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Leonard Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits.
In agricultural news, Farm Bill negotiators yesterday revisited the issues of adjusted gross income and payment limits for commodity programs. Lawmakers declined to provide specifics early Tuesday evening, but lobbyists say negotiators could be looking to eliminate commodity payments for individuals making $500,000 of non-farm income and may set a $750,000 cap on all income. Those numbers would double for married couples. Lawmakers may also readjust the cap on direct payments to $45,000 and establish a $1 million adjusted gross income cap for conservation programs. although that cap may have some exemptions. Negotiators say an up or down vote in the House could come this week on the conference report, which may not be amended. Meanwhile, the White House is renewing its threat to veto the bill, saying it's $18 billion over budget. Senate Budget Committee Chairman Kent Conrad.
We are committed to an official scored bill that is $10 billion above baseline, not $11 billion, not $15, not $18. And we are following the rules. Now, they want to start making up their own rules. We will never reach conclusion. But that's what we're hearing from them.
Senate Budget Committee Chairman Kent Conrad. The Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee is hearing testimony today on the effects that the federal ethanol subsidy may be having on the U.S. food supply. Lawmakers are also expected to examine the prices consumers have to pay for their groceries. Yesterday, in a House Energy and Commerce Subcommittee hearing, ethanol backers cautioned Congress against attempts to roll back the nation's 36-billion-gallon renewable fuel standard. And lawmakers critical of ethanol repeatedly argued the RFS reflects what they call the law of unintended consequences, including inflated food prices with little or no effect on reducing gasoline prices. The president of the Renewable Fuels Association says a proposal by Texas to waive half the renewable fuels standard would likely drive up gasoline prices to $4.71 a gallon. Bob Dineen says an ethanol waiver would have a devastating impact on consumers. And nearly 10,000 South Koreans held candlelight vigils yesterday, calling on Seoul to nix a deal to resume U.S. beef imports. But the nation's chief trade negotiator on the issue rejected any possibility of revisiting the deal reached last month. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at WILL Public Radio for the Farming World. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website, the address, willag.org. If you do that and you sign up for our weekend newsletter, all you have to do is hit subscribe. It's over there on the right-hand side of the page. This Friday morning, when those numbers come out from USDA, we'll send them to you in email. It's all at willag.org. That's willag.org. In today's listener opinion forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochkus says American agriculture is the key to blunting the world food crisis.
If there is one thing the world doesn't need right now, it's another crisis. But the food crisis is front page news along with gasoline prices, home foreclosures, and other causes of instability and widespread concern. Prices of food commodities like wheat and rice have soared. World food stocks are historically low, and food riots have broken out in a few hot spots around the globe. Americans are experiencing higher food prices, too, but today's rate is not as steep as what was seen as recently as 1990 and 1991. Certainly, higher food prices in the United States today are nothing compared to the poorer regions of the world, where food is a far bigger component of the cost of living. One big factor, American agriculture. The last time there was a food crisis is the 1970s, and Agriculture Department economist Don Parlberg warned about what he called the myth of immutable forces, that humankind was helpless and doomed. His biggest worry was that it would become a self-fulfilling prophecy. Today we're not doomed, but a food crisis is a serious matter. The crisis is a wake-up call to the importance of agriculture and food security. Food is a national security concern and vital to the stability of the entire world. Much of the world's food aid comes from the United States. One of the world's best safeguards against a worsening food crisis is American agriculture. The productivity of our farmers and the science and technology that equips them to be the best and share their knowledge and abundance. The same is not true with the energy crisis. We depend on foreign sources of oil. Even with the financial crisis, investments by foreign governments known as sovereign wealth funds bailed out several large U.S. financial institutions. No American would want to be in the middle of a food crisis and be so dependent on foreign goodwill. In the 1970s, the food crisis didn't last long and was eventually followed by a long period of adequate supplies and price stability. There is no reason to think the same won't happen this time, but the world does need to wake up to the food realities. This is not the time for developing countries to turn away from biotechnology and other science. Traditional seeds and traditional farming methods have kept pace with an expanding world population. Fortunately, there is no reason for this food crisis to last as long as the energy crisis, especially with America as the world's leader in agriculture. This is Amy Rochkus with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkus' comments are her own. They reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, just call us at 217-333-0850.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the University of Illinois. Joining us now for a look at the cash grain market is Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain. She's in Terre Haute, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Kay.
Good afternoon to you, Todd.
I bet the rainfall or the expected rainfall is not making farmers in your area very happy.
No, we've had anywhere from 3 to 4 tenths to 7 tenths to hardly anything, but they're talking probably an inch and a half before this is all over with. And but really, Todd, we've gotten a lot of corn in the ground. I'd say we're probably maybe 60% done, very little beans put in. So they're not really panicking at this point. So, but they're talking about another system Saturday night and Sunday, so it may be a while before we get back in the field.
Now, for some of those, your planting season runs, I think, a little longer potentially there, and you're only, what, 2 hours south of us, really, but or an hour south of us, really. But your season really is a bit longer in terms of being able to get the crop in the ground and successfully harvest a good corn or soybean crop. Is that right?
That's absolutely correct. So, you know, we've still got a pretty good planting window, so nobody's really worried at this point, and no plans of switching that I've heard of. And our home office in Omaha canvassed all of the elevators, and they all said that at this point nobody's ready to switch over to beans yet.
Okay, and then tell me about basis levels in your area.
Well, when I talked to you last week, the basis levels had improved in as far as train values, probably 7 or 8 cents. But since then, we've really kind of backed off a little bit. They're just more stagnant than anything, so very little basis improvement. The processors still seem to be beating the socks off of us rail-located people. So just a really slow climb back up, Todd.
And is there a reason behind that that you can discern?
I'm just assuming that there's still just enough moving and maybe some people still picking up piles. We've still got some traffic coming in here. You know, a lot of farmers have some hired help or hired truckers, so we're still dumping a good bit here at the elevator, and I guess there's just enough meeting demand out there that the basis levels are just very, very stagnant.
And then tell me what you think about this 32-cent jump in the nearby May and the November contract for the soybeans up 28 cents. Does it present an opportunity?
You know, nobody is wanting to sell any beans at this point. They snoop around for prices, but they're waiting for something a little bit better. And it's just whatever happens in Argentina. That's at least I think that's what kind of sparked this thing today was more talk of strike down there. So, I mean, it's just a toss-up. Who knows what this market's going to do? It's anybody's guess.
Your bids for the day?
Cash corn is 587, cash beans 1271, new crop wheat is 598.
Thank you much.
Thank you.
That's Kay Whitlock. She's with Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Wednesday afternoons.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. The trial of a man charged with murdering his estranged wife in southwest Champaign County and burying her body in a wooded area will stay in the county. A judge has turned down a change of venue request for Robert Arnett's attorneys. Arnett's accused of covering up Naomi Arnett's killing last May. She was missing for months until searchers found her body near Sadorus, where the family lived. The trial is set to begin in August. 7 teenagers are accused of being involved in a string of home burglaries on Champaign's west side. Police say their investigation began when a caller to Crime Stoppers tipped them off to a suspicious car near Parkland College. The arrest of the 2 teens after a brief chase led police to question 5 other teens. They're all accused in connection with more than a dozen break-ins dating back several weeks. Police say they also recovered stolen items from the teens' homes, including two firearms. In St. Joseph, a 17-year-old boy has been arrested on suspicion of another rash of burglaries. Sheriff's police accuse Cody Alanya of a number of home and vehicle break-ins. They say they've recovered thousands of dollars in allegedly stolen items. But they say the arrest is not related to another burglary where a gun was taken from a St. Joseph home. That break-in led school officials to lock down their buildings for 2 days last week. Indiana's Secretary of State is among those questioning the slow vote count in Lake County last night. Todd Rokita says the public has the right to monitor proceedings and that every other urban area of Indiana manages to get quicker election results. Governor Rob Blagojevich's office says it's appealing a judge's ruling that keeps it from enrolling people in an expanded health care program that the state launched without legislative approval. Thousands of people have already joined. A city official is recommending that Urbana's Historic Preservation Commission not grant landmark status to a downtown hotel. The historic Lincoln has gone through several owners in the last decade, but its new owner says the company is negotiating with major chains and landmark status could impede renovation plans. The man who proposed the status says he's torn between the hotel's viability and the need to preserve the building. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Drew Lerner. He's the senior agricultural meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the weather here in the Midwest.
Wet, 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 huh? It doesn't look real pleasant out there right now. We've got some thunderstorms will be rumbling across the region over the next day and a half, and more showers and thunderstorms coming up for this coming weekend, and more showers and thunderstorms coming up next week. Unfortunately, the opportunity for significant drying between these events is not real pretty. It's not real good. We're expecting to see the precipitation occur within 2 or 3 days of each other, if not quicker than that. And so the end result is that we're going to continue dealing with too much moisture around the region. We've probably seen the last of our good field working days across the heart of the Midwest for a good 10 days here. I don't want to paint too much of a doom and gloom picture because I think there's potential for these weather disturbances to be somewhat weaker down the road, and we might get a little better sunshine, but certainly the way the models look right now, it's hard to fight against that, and we are going to see enough moisture across the region to make it difficult for us to achieve the kind of planting progress that we so badly need to see right now.
As we talked about this with other folks earlier in the week, there was a suggestion that Iowa would probably be wet, southern Illinois and Missouri would be wet, Indiana, Ohio might be wet, but that if you got from central Illinois north into Chicago, maybe parts of Wisconsin, they might be a little drier or have a better shot at this. Have this changed much? And are we just looking at system-wide across the Corn Belt rains in those days and how often?
Yeah, I think one of my concerns about trying to single out certain parts of the Midwest is that we still have temperatures that are no better than normal during this 10-day period. And actually in the second half of next week into the following weekend will actually be cooler than usual by a significant amount. And the concern is that there's just not enough space between weather systems to really firm up the soil in a dramatic way. Even though the amounts are going to be lighter in some of those northern areas, I think it would be kind of silly of us to assume that there will be aggressive field work done. Yes, there will be some field work, I think, but we're going to still be way behind what the usual pace should be at this time of the year. So I don't want to imply that there's not going to be any field progress, but those northern areas are still going to get rain periodically, even though the amounts may not be all that high. And so the end result is the same, I think. And when we get into the cooler weather next week, it's going to be hard for us to dry down. Some of these areas will have had quite a bit of moisture by then. Obviously, the areas you just described are probably not going to see quite as much as other areas, but we are still going to be fighting a moisture surplus and a frequency of precipitation that's just not going to be conducive of good field progress.
Once you get past that 10 days and look beyond the 17th, do things change very much?
I do think that things are going to be changing a little bit. I think we are going to see the jet stream shift back to the north. We're going to have to run out of cold air here at the end of this 10-day period. I say that knowing that the atmosphere is trying to warm right now, and we're going to be pushing a huge amount of cool air to the south and the lower latitudes. It's going to drain Canada of some of the cold for a little while. So the jet stream is likely to snap back Putting the jet stream back into the northern parts of the Midwest as we go into that last part of the two-week forecast, and that should help to bring us warmer weather, less precipitation in the lower parts of the Midwest. Unfortunately, the rains will probably increase a little bit across the Canadian border on the northern fringe of the region.
Thanks much, Drew.
Have a good day.
Drew Lerner is the Senior Agricultural Meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated. I'm Todd Gleason.